Damn it. That's the way it's going to happen.
Son of a bitch. Stop.
Hi, everybody.
Where's the producer at? Stop him from talking.
Oh, man. We are just two guys strong tonight. It's me and Mike Hobart right now. Alex Stanzik might be joining us. Gabe has got some home repairs going on. And I think Jordan is avoiding his second blizzard. So, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of like triage / crisis mode right now.
Yeah, we will wish all those guys well and everything else. When is Chuck Norris as a featured guest? Oh, that would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Is he still alive?
I don't know. He's got a son that, yeah, Chuck Norris. Is he still alive? I mean, there's got to be a joke about it. Death consults Chuck Norris about his last days on Earth. I know, right? That's what's happening. But what's up, everybody out there? We're going to have a fun show tonight between me and Mike. If Alex shows up or not, we'll see. But we're going to be talking some ETF hangover. We're going to be talking some WEF, some politics here in the U.S., and whatever else we want to get into. Might be a little bit of a shorter show, but you're here for the pre-party. And between the two of us and me trying to keep up with comments and all this kind of stuff, if I don't get to you in the comments, or maybe we'll have more comments this time around. If you've got questions for me and Mike especially, during this show, throw them in there. But yeah, I'd love to get Chuck Norris on here. That'd be fantastic.
I think that would be, I wonder if that would like break the internet. Like, has Chuck Norris been on a podcast before?
I don't know that I've ever seen him on a podcast. I don't know. I don't keep up with Chuck Norris. I am a fan of Chuck Norris. The guy's lived a pretty good life, I think. I have no idea. But
I used to watch his Texas Rangers show at my grandfather's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually used to. I can't say that I remember any of it because I was a child. I mean, like, it was at the same time that the Bulls were doing great. So, you know.
Golly, that was a long time for you. I mean, you were super young. I mean, I was at least in my teenage years during that time.
Yep. Oh, man. The good old days.
Coinfather met Chuck Norris on a deployment in Kuwait.
Oh, he must have been at the Air Force base at Ali Asalim then, because there's no way Norris was going to Camp Buring.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ali Asalim was down there, and then you had, what was the other one right there in Kuwait? It was,
There's Buring, like, aka Butt Ring. There was that one, but, like, I don't know. Like, those are honestly the only two that I knew of, because being an aviation unit, it was literally just us in the Air Force stuff that we were concerned with.
Hey, Alex, can you hear us?
Yo, what's up?
Hey,
man?
We're already live. We're kicking it here. Told the guys that we're going to be a little short tonight. We're going to cover some ETF, some WEF stuff, some politics here in the U.S. and whatever else the hell we want to get into. It's going to be, I think, more of a upbeat, fun show this week. Right on.
Sounds good. AKA what Shane's saying is that with the whole group is boring.
we got pretty dystopian last week, and I mean, I listen, like, as the days go on, and I mean, even talking to some clients here and there, man, it's like they're asking about things like other, you know, things outside of Bitcoin, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, and people ask you, hey man, are you Bitcoin maximalist? I'm like, yeah, I'm a Bitcoin maximalist in terms of, you know, my investments, right? Like, if I've got liquidity, it's going to Bitcoin. But in terms of like Bitcoin only, no, man, there's a lot of other stuff out there in terms of like Citadel preparation, just being more independent that I think a lot of these people are super interested in. So yeah, it's changing fast. I mean, now people are finally starting to come around to this idea that like, oh shit, guys, like, this might actually be on us because there's nobody coming to save you guys.
Well, it's funny how like everybody calls preppers like crazies and weirdos until you inject a little bit of chaos for a consistent period of time, and then everyone's like, hey, do you have any tips on like what to start doing and like what are you seeing? And I'm scared shitless right now. there's a lot of concern.
Really average people too. Like and just really average people too. I mean, I've talked to people who you'd never even imagine these people are worried about certain types of things. And then when they find out that when they see Bitcoin, they finally figure out, oh, then they start digging into how messed up the actual financial system is, how much corruption there is in the regular economy, how much corruption there is in government, how much corruption there is in all the various different institutions. and they're like, wow, man, Bitcoin really, I hope this thing really works because we really, really need this thing, right? And then like in one guy in particular, for example, this guy is probably, I want to say he's in his mid 70s, maybe getting to his 80s. And he's like, you know, when he heard Elizabeth Warren going hard after Bitcoin, he's like, man, they might actually make owning this illegal. Like, what are we going to do? He's like, do I need to get a passport and like go somewhere else? Like, these are people who would never think about this stuff.
Yeah. You know what
I mean? I mean, they live lives of like, I mean, they worked hard their whole life. They're wealthy. They're comfortable. Like, they live in these areas of the United States. They're just super comfortable.
Yeah.
Probably never seen a violent act in their entire lives, you know? And they're like, what is going on here?
Well, it shows how much he values like the asset too. If he's asking that question, like, do I need to think about getting a passport? It's like, most people would just be like, they see what's going on with Warren in the political sphere, and they're like, all right, I'm just selling it and getting out of here. But he's like, no, I'm like, I might have to leave the country. That's a serious level of commitment, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say like that's in the plans if need be, right? Like, I mean, for, you know, as much as I, you know, will fight my ass off, like if it's determined, like there's a situation where the best thing to do is to get the hell out of this country and avoid, you know, war and violence and all that kind of stuff. Like, okay. Yeah. Yeah. You know, something will be around. It's just,
especially for your family. Like, it's one thing to be willing to stick around and fight, but then if you're going to like to, for somebody to suggest that they're willing to drag their family through that, like that's a different level of calculus.
But think of where we are nowadays though. These are regular conversations people are having nowadays. Yeah. In the United States of America. That is mind blowing.
Yeah. I mean, my grandfather, well, I shouldn't say my grandfather, my great grandfathers, you know, those guys decided to leave Germany, right? And during a really bad
smart move in
Germany. Yeah. Right. It was like, would we have been better off if we would have stayed? I don't know. Maybe we may not have existed at all if they would have stayed, you know, depending on what goes on. And, you know, I think it's obviously we've got this really cool thing in terms of hindsight here in America, looking back at, you know, what happened in Germany, especially not the politicized, you know, taught to you in government indoctrination courses, you know, the actual real understanding of why Germany went down the hole it went down. And, you know, you kind of see that and you're like, well, we're still well ahead of where the Germans were, you know, before Hitler comes to power.
You kind of need a Weimar collapse first before that,
right? Yeah.
Did Weimar happen prior to Hitler? Is that what it was? Was that the course of events? It was Weimar.
By the way, they still then Hitler? They also had a rise of a very similar, or maybe even like almost the exact same rise of the whole trans and mixing of the genders type thing too before they went through that whole debacle. So
yeah, there's a lot that's left out in history in terms of Weimar Germany. There's so much left out, and you know, Mike touching on some of these things that were, you know, flipping society on its head, changing definitions, having, you know, these loose, you know, morals and characters and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying, you know, you can ever, you know, legislate morality, but at the same time, you know, the cultural norm, like what's kind of acceptable and what's not acceptable. You know, I think Putin actually was talking about this and I was like, man, this guy is nailing. He talked about this, you know, just recently, I think maybe today, about, you know, like restrooms in America, you know, like manhood and womanhood and all these things, you know, being up for debate in the United States, in some cases, a lot of cases in more progressive areas, you know, things like this happening where, you know, schools are allowing men into girls, you know, locker rooms and things like that. And you're sitting there basically telling, you know, the girls to sit down and shut up and just be comfortable with some dude that might be a pervert in there. And you're like, you can't know. You have no idea. Yeah. And Vladimir Putin's making this point about the West. Like, look at these morons. Look at what they're putting up with over there in their decaying society.
That's some significant egg on our face.
Oh. yeah. Joe Biden is really some pretty sick karma for the U.S. empire, right? Like if you really look at it and you go, man, if the U.S. was really indemnified into a person and you had to like construct a person around what the U.S. empire has become, it's Joe Biden.
Well, I will add a little bit of pushback to that. The president is more of a patsy, in my opinion. Like the failings is going to be from Congress, right? Because they determine like the budget, they determine what gets passed, what gets financing, all of that. Now, the little bit of power that the president does have is picking the cabinet, right? If I'm not mistaken. So he does like have some influence in that regard. But Joe Biden's just literally just a useful idiot for this regime. Our serious problem is Congress. And like the worst problem is the fact that everybody is so focused on the dog and pony show that is the presidential campaign, but nobody puts significant thought into who they vote for on the congressional ballot.
Yeah. And that you're exactly right. And I guess what my thought and argument there was, is like, this is the perception of the world, right? Like this is the executive of the United States, where most people think that the president has far more power than he actually does in terms of a constitutional republic. But yeah, you're not wrong. Should we start the show?
I do agree real quick. Yeah. We should start the show. I agree with Shane though. Like,
yes, I still agree.
A reflection of the people. And like what you've got right now is a reflection of basically the corruption that's going on. So let's address it. Let's fix that shit.
Yeah.
Let's do it right after this. Welcome to Bitcoin Veterans, everybody. I'm Shane Hazel. I'm joined by Mike Hobart and Alex Stanzik tonight. Jordan and Gabe are out dealing with life.
Yeah, that's a way to put it.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously that's what happens around 2024. And I think it's going to happen a lot more. But thank you guys for being here, for all the usuals that show up in the YouTube and Facebook and Twitter crowd, everybody out there. Thank you guys so much. And, obviously, out there in the Signal universe, you guys are killing it. Really appreciate it. We are here to put you guys back on a mission to give you some passion in your life all around Bitcoin, driven by replacing this really shitty communications protocol that we have out there in this fiat Keynesian world, and restoring the idea of working from capital from Bitcoin. And this Austrian model versus this, you know, putrid Keynesian model that's collapsing all around us in real time. You know, we've been talking a lot, and you know, I think, you know, before you even came up tonight, we were like, man, we could fill an hour and a half probably no problem with everything that's going on in the world right now. But there's been some really good developments out there, and you know, I think I'd probably be remiss if we didn't talk about the ETF hangover first and foremost.
Transition away from fossil fuels.
That's John Kerry. That old fossil WEF. We'll get to you, John. Just wait a second, damn it.
John, just hold your line, dude. Just hold on to your number. Like, we'll get you in a second.
Yeah. If you guys are out there in the audience, we're going to take as much feedback as possible. With only three guys here tonight, I will be getting to the comments as I can, and where it makes sense, we'll pay attention. We've got some big things coming up. If you guys haven't blocked out, I think it's the 24th through the 27th in Tennessee for Bitcoin.
In July, specifically.
Yeah, July. Yeah, thank you, Mike.
Yep.
Appreciate that. Bitcoin Veterans is going to be taking over Nashville, and we've got a nice spot down there at the conference. We're going to have up a tent and quite a few things going on. I think we've got a meeting room where we're going to have some people talk about some different things in terms of Citadels, comms, presentations, you name it, different tech that's coming out. And, you know, we're trying to get everybody out there. We've got an amazing discount code, but you're going to have to DM us for it. We're not just giving it out to everybody. So you can get in touch with us. And yeah, it's so big.
It's actually 70% off.
70% off. So the
we got confirmation where we're allowed to actually say that.
Awesome. So thanks.
Put it everywhere.
Thanks to the guys over Bitcoin Magazine, first and foremost, for agreeing to have us, for also making this an event where we can get people interested and bring people out, maybe that aren't even Bitcoiners yet. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. It's a big deal. We've got a range day that we're organizing amongst a lot of other things, probably some cookouts and, you know, just good fraternity.
Do we know, Alex, you may know, is that only specifically for the military vets, or are we doing that for service members too?
Range day?
No, the discount.
I believe the discount's for active duty veteran. Like, okay. I think it's for anybody in our group.
Yep.
Okay. Right.
Cool.
And that's my understanding.
If you're connected to Bitcoin veterans, whether you're first responder, civilian, active duty veteran, or whatever, then talk to us. We've got up to 200 of these available.
And so I think we're like 10% is gone already. Like they're flying off, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't you, if you can get 70%, right? Pretty, that's not bad, you know, not bad. So, yeah, I mean, and, you know, I just want to say thank you to Bitcoin Mag for doing it. It was very kind of them. I mean, they're allowing to do some really cool stuff at the conference, too. I'm not going to say what it is. We want to make sure we have all our ducks in a row before we reveal what we're doing. But it's going to be mind blowing. And they're basically letting us do essentially what we want. It's going to be a good time.
That also means that when we show up, guys, relatively well behaved, right? Like we want to market and represent the group.
This is worth talking about, right? Like we're all going to have a good time, and I think, you know, there's going to be plenty of booze and opportunity to make asses of ourselves within our own.
Don't burn the convention center down in the name of Bitcoin veterans. It's not going to look good, you know. Just all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
we will pull the DOD of like, we don't know who they are.
Yeah.
Not part of our group.
So if you're wearing some,
why are you wearing your t-shirt?
I saw you hugging that guy 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who that guy is.
You guys know the deal. You know, what is it? Don't subtract from the population. Don't add to the population. If you get caught, then establish dominance quickly. All that fun stuff. Yeah, you know, like here,
you get caught and thrown in jail. Establish dominance. Yeah.
You know, we're gonna have a good time, but we're gonna be the professionals. We're gonna act with class, and we are going to. I think we're gonna bring another dimension to Bitcoin, and to have, you know, 16.5 million veterans that are out there in this network to start seeing this and to start pulling on this, especially in Nashville. I mean, a lot of, you know, people may not know, if you were in the Marine Corps or the Navy and you didn't get into the interior part of the shitty part of the installations around, you know, Fort Campbell and the rest of those areas, a lot of guys from the Army live in these areas. And, yeah, you know, to be able to be an effective, you know, confluence for these guys to bring them in and, you know, show them something new and it just kind of introduce Bitcoin to these guys. I think it's going to go a long way. I think Nashville is a much different area and city for us to do something even more positive like this.
Yeah, I'm stoked. I like, every time I've been to Nashville, it's been a good time, which is surprising because I've been to Nashville because I went to Fort Campbell. Usually that would like taint somebody's experience, but yeah, dude, I'm stoked to go. Now, I've never been to Nashville in July, so that will be interesting. I've been to Nashville in the winter, Yeah, I've been to Nashville in the winter, and it was awesome. But this will be a good test of my fortitude for sure.
It's going to be hot and steamy for sure.
Yeah.
So we want to try to get at least 200 veterans and spouses, et cetera, up there to this conference. So,
we could do that easy.
Yeah. If you're interested and you want to go, for sure, talk to us.
All right, guys, ETF hangover time, right? Everybody's kind of coming down off of this anticipation high that they were on from last week. We're crabbing through. We're losing a little bit. The last time I checked, we were in the 41,000 range. You guys
41,273 as we speak. I smash bought, by the way, at these levels.
it's going down even further.
Oh yeah, dude. Like the hangover hasn't even hit like full steam yet. We're in the process of just like we're waking up the night after and we're just starting to realize we're gonna get a hangover. Like we have to get into like the noon time frame before like the actual like hangover's hitting full swing.
Yeah. You better take your Advil and drink some water right now, right? Like this.
Or go get that Pedialyte and start drinking.
I got some great news for you.
Okay.
And that is, it might be a long way to being over. Because so far, I saw a really wicked chart today. So it's got all the different ETFs and they're all like got these gigantic candles representing how much net inflows that they've got. And they're adding up over the last 5 days of trading of all these ETFs that have launched. And they're all super positive. It looks great. And over on the far side of the chart, you've got the GBDC candle and it's negative and it's longer all the ones going up combined.
Yeah. Right? 300 billion, isn't it? And then some.
It's like 1.6 billion.
I think a total of like close to 1.6 billion of outflows from GBDC. It's quite a bit. Now,
shout out to Matt for sharing that, by the way.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, that's a lot of selling. That's a lot of selling. Right. And it's not just a rotation into the ETFs. It's not just that they're selling and they're rotating into the ETFs. They're selling and they're buying Bitcoin. They're just rotating out of GBDC. Like I have a lot of clients who told me, man, I'm so underwater on this GBDC thing that the discount is at some point I was talking to some of these guys, like the discount to the NAV is like 25%. And I'm like, you know, less than half of what I bought it for. And like, if this thing ever gets close to what I bought it for, I'm out, you know? And that's what's happening right now. You got all these people who've been damaged and they're like, yeah, I'm getting out. Not to mention the fact that GBDC has got a 1.5% fee, which is more than triple any of the other ETFs. And like, look, I get it. If you're sitting on $28 billion worth of Bitcoin, it's like 26.5 billion now. But if you're sitting on Bitcoin and you're charging 1.5% in fees, that's a lot of fees, man. That's like over $400 million a year.
Yeah.
And let's be generous and say it costs some, let's say $2 million to run the fund. I doubt it, but let's just say that's what it costs them to run it. That's a ton of profit, right?
Yeah.
They can bleed for a long time and be just fine, right? So here's the good news. They sold $1.5 billion. They got about another $26 billion to go.
And on top of that, like just the way they were structured before is like they're not like any Bitcoin that they lose is only for them selling OTC into these other products, right? Because like there's no withdrawing Bitcoin from like clients withdrawing Bitcoin from their fund.
No, they have to sell it. Like if clients are selling, right, and then they have to somehow make redemptions, which would be the reason why they would sell the underlying asset, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of the statistics I saw about 60 days. So I think Matt was right on here in terms of like getting these guys drained, right? Is like if we're sitting at 60 days from now. There's going to be something that also happens that I haven't heard anybody really talk about is, that number 60 days is going to get out. People are going to start thinking about it. And when we kind of come to that Rubicon again, where, things are going to probably start happening or where we think things are going to start happening, you know, who knows, but I think there's going to be some more of that anticipation, right? Like, as in going into the ETF, as you get closer and closer to that 60-day mark of like GBTC probably running out of cheap Bitcoin for everybody else to have, you're going to start seeing that anticipation grow, and you could see a lot of momentum coming up to that point where, you know, if we're coming down and it stops maybe within the next 30, maybe 35 days, 40 days or somewhere around there, you start to see that push back into Bitcoin from everybody that's, you know, buying as much as they can. Well, you've got maybe some of the last historically low prices on Bitcoin we'll ever see.
Well, the next question to your guys' point and Matt's point is, if this continues, I would recommend or invite anybody that's watching to start looking into who were the people that took out collateralized loans and they were using GBTC, because I believe that there was a lot of people that were doing that back in the past. And I believe there was a significant amount of miners that were doing that. I might be wrong. I'm likely wrong on that, but like the reason that I mentioned that is that like on the mining front, like we, like the difficulty just keeps staying high because the hash rate just keeps going up and to the right. Like it looks like what the Bitcoin price chart that everybody wants to see, right? And price is staying suppressed and muted and even like kind of drifting downward. Start watching for Bitcoin miners to come under a lot of pressure. And if they start running into issues, if they still have these collateralized loans out, that could be a problem, especially for Grayscale. But that could just be me like misremembering and speculating and just spreading a bunch of FUD for no reason. So, but anybody that wants to get investigative, I would look into that angle.
You know, if you're the guys running Grayscale and you just kind of put yourself in their shoes for a minute, I mean, they can afford to lose half of their stack and still make a gigantic amount of money. Maybe
that's true.
I mean, maybe here's a scenario for you. What if they're just waiting to see if it just slows down? Like, there's going to be a certain number of investors who are paying attention, and there's going to be a ton of investors who aren't, right? What, yeah. Of the ones who are paying attention, how much is that? Is it 10%? Is it 20%? Is it 30%? Is it half? Who knows? I mean, they probably have already done the math. If I was them, I'd be doing the math, and I'd be like, all right, here's our cutoff line. It's not, it wouldn't take them much to just change it, right? They file a change to the prospectus. They change how much they're charging. No big deal, right? That's not a big deal. Anybody, they can do this. They take them a week. Less even if they really wanted to push it, probably.
Yep.
Right. So they could drop their fees to 0.25 if they wanted to, or 0.20 or whatever. And they would still probably have a massive, massive in the double digit billions head start on every other ETF out there.
Do you think they will?
I don't know. I guess we're gonna
think it'd be kind of silly if they didn't, right?
There's a reason they're taking this strategy. I have no idea what it is, but I mean, they had to have thought about this stuff, right?
Right. Yeah, I agree.
We don't even run their business, and we were contemplating when these things go live, GBTC is going to get eaten. They're going to puke assets under management, right? Because who the fuck is going to pay 1.5% when you can get another one for 0.20?
I mean, to your point, it is just smart strategically to not panic and just let things like kind of like play out and see where the chips lie first.
If they bleed 20% of a $28 billion stack, what is that? Maybe 3 billion? No, I'm sorry, I'm doing my math.
20% would be seven billion.
So yeah. They'd still be sitting on 20 billion at 1.5% fees. That is still gigantic. And if it takes, you know, people forever to figure it out, and to believe me, some people don't pay attention to this stuff. They put their money into an investment and they don't think about it for a year or 2 years.
They don't think about it at all. There's some people, right, that are so dependent on these financial advisors and think that whatever their financial advisor says is golden. I trust this guy. This guy's got my best interest. He's made me money. Blah. And you're just like, oh my God, you are missing so, yeah, and you're exactly right. Like, this is what people miss all the time, right? Is, you know, historically CPI is over 8%, and you know, if you take out all the crap numbers, are you really getting 8% back? Have you been getting 8% back? Because I guarantee you probably haven't. Like
that's getting covered up by their consistent dropping money into it.
Yeah. I mean, they're hemorrhaging money in so many different places. They're just losing, you know, money at a slower rate than some other people are losing money. And that's the thing I don't think a lot of people understand. There was a good comment up here, and maybe we should back up, because I know there's a lot of you guys in this audience that have been in Bitcoin for a long time, but we've got some new Bitcoin veterans that are around here and people who are in the audience that may not know Bitcoin or come into Bitcoin for the first time. Sean, yeah, I saw this and I was like, yeah, you know what? Maybe it's worth explaining to people like the difference between an ETF and real Bitcoin just for a second. I mean, I know a lot of us are further along, but if we're not, you know, if we're not growing people who are coming in and, you know, talking about this kind of stuff, I think we're missing a little bit. Sean says, for everybody out there that can't see the video, saw a great tweet today. Owning Bitcoin ETF is like saying, I have a girlfriend, but she stays at BlackRock's house. BlackRock sends me pictures every quarter and I pay BlackRock fees for this. And I saw the same tweet and I thought it was hysterical. I was like,
way to bring like to meld like the Bitcoin ETF conversation with like cuckold culture. like Jesus. It's accurate though.
He's exactly right. And for everybody, what he's saying in plain English is Bitcoin ETFs are paper. There's no in kind. You're never going to get the Bitcoin from these ETFs. They're never going to give you Bitcoin. What you're going to get back is fiat. And it may be discounted fiat, depending on, you know, what schemes and maneuvering these guys are doing, you know, down the road. I guarantee you what they're doing is they're leveraging your money. They're making money on that. And that's how they do business. So at the end of the day, if you're contemplating ETF versus Bitcoin, learn Bitcoin, get with somebody that understands Bitcoin. Maybe not Mike, cause he drops out once in a while, but but learn Bitcoin and learn how to self custody your Bitcoin. That is if there's anything that we preach around here, it's not your keys, not your cheese. That's rule number one and two in Bitcoin.
Well, and like another thing that I don't know if it concerns me quite yet, but like the fact that I haven't seen anybody like Elizabeth Warren bringing up a suggestion of like a 6102 type thing for Bitcoin makes me wonder if they're actually hoping to try and do something like that. Right. Because like when it comes to like for the same reason that I kind of like barked at Vivek Ramaswamy for bringing up that he like if he got to the presidency, he would disband the FBI. I'm like, dude, if you were actually planning on doing it, you wouldn't have talked about it.
Operational security. Right.
Yeah. It's just so once like I won't be confident that it's not happening until I see people talking about it.
I don't know if I agree with that. Look at Milei. Like if that guy's legit. You know, he talked about what he was going to do before he got in office. This will get all the people behind him. And then he did it.
Did right? he follow through on like the stuff that he was talking about?
He's starting to. And
he cut like, I don't know, 50% of the government agencies on day one. They were just all gone. Okay. Fired, gone. 380,000 laws and regulations rescinded. Gone.
Yeah.
Just gone.
And you know, like good starts, right? And I always tell people, you know, like, they're good starts, but you also got to drill into like, well, what's the whole piece? If you're not looking at, you know, I know 300,000 sounds like an incredible amount of regulation to cut, like, hey, great start. But in terms of like regulation, I don't know how much regulation Argentina has. Like if 300,000 out of a million is the total pie, then, oh man, that guy is
or 10 million.
Right. Yeah. As
fair point. Like how, you know, how big is the stack, right?
How big is that, you know, that regulation pool? And if it's, you know, 10, 20, 30 million, maybe more, and I guarantee you it is here in the United States. So if it's bigger than that and, oh, he did something. Well, okay. That's real cute, but it really didn't do shit for, you know, most of the country yet. It
took like three marbles out of the mountain of marbles and just put them in his stack.
That's exactly it, man.
Let's go back to the ETFs for 1 second, because there's something that I've been thinking about lately that is that if you look at the amount that they're buying, I mean, forget the fact that Bitcoin's at 41,132 right now. You guys should smash buy.
3-1.
I'm curious. I've caught myself every time it goes down like 1,000 or whatever. Smash buy every time it goes down. That way you can always say you bought the dip or you bought the bottom.
Yeah.
And then it's going to go back up eventually. So we're good. but if you look at the amount of volume that's come in for just in 5 days of trading, it's really kind of mind blowing. Like if we continue that pace, I mean, you're talking like 25,000 Bitcoin just for the BlackRock ETF alone in 5 days.
Well, it's like, what is it? 7 times what silver is? Silver is 12, right?
So the Bitcoin ETFs have passed silver. I think they're now the third or second largest ETF in the world now.
Okay.
But I'm just thinking about in comparison to how much Bitcoin is being produced every single day.
Yeah.
What is the number? I think it's like 900 or 700.
It's 900 Bitcoin every day.
900 a day, right? Yeah. Okay, in April, around April 15th of this year now, that's going to get cut in half again to 450 a day. And they're buying one of them, 25,000 every 5 days.
I mean, and Matt, thanks for coming through with the statistics on this, Matt. Only 216,000 Bitcoin in 2024. And what was the 35,000 total in the 4 days?
Okay. 216,000 Bitcoin going to be mined in 2024. Thank you, Matthew J. This is him in the chat right now. I mean, what is that? 10 weeks of activity will eat that entire stack.
Yeah.
At this pace.
Yeah. I mean, by late March, the world's going to be completely different. Completely different.
Putting it mildly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's mind boggling to how fast the supply is getting eaten alive right now. I mean, I think a lot of us thought it might've been faster. I think there were, you know, I know we talked about it a little bit in terms of, you know, GBTC kind of offloading or getting wrecked because of their fees. But yeah, this whole thing is, it's changing so fast, and just, you know, have this, I don't know what some people will see as a letdown and a perfect time to go out there and smash buy. It's wonderful to see what Bitcoin does to people who are trying to play with Bitcoin. You know what I mean? And that's the thing, is whether you're long or you're short, you're just not a hodler, right? Like the only people that aren't getting wrecked by Bitcoin are the people who are hodling, like those psychopaths that wrote it all the way down from 69 to 15,000 and now are writing it all the way back up and buying every damn little bit they can from the dip. And these guys,
I was gonna say, I can't wait until like the traders, like the specific, like the tech traders and everything, like mm-hmm. they start, like you start seeing like clips of them just like flipping out because they don't understand, like they thought they were like approaching the whole like trading Bitcoin approach like a tech stock, because it's like it's a digital currency, but then it trades like more like a commodity with like how quickly like things happen and how like it'll, like things will move slowly.
The truth is, it trades unlike anything we have ever seen.
Yeah.
So you got these guys that are trying to apply traditional TA to Bitcoin, and it's like it never does what they're expecting it to do, because we've never had anything that trades like this or behaves like this. We've never seen anything like this. The human race has never seen anything like Bitcoin. That's not hyperbole. These are the fact that it's
availability for trading 24/7, 365, not beholden to any sort of financial institution, like also throws a monkey wrench in those strategies. But like the
institutional narrative is also shifting, like in private, right? You've got a lot of institutions who do research, private institutions who consult the high net worth, ultra high net worth markets in the West. Right. They write private newsletters. These aren't out in public. This isn't Bloomberg where you can go get the news and you find out what's going on. These are private research letters that people pay a lot of money for.
Yeah.
You're starting to see language appearing that is very pro Bitcoin.
Yep.
Wild
shift. You've never seen this kind of stuff before. And then, you know, what are they going to spend on advertising in this war for market share? 100 million, maybe $250 million. Who knows? It's going to be a lot, because what's it worth?
Well, and like that was actually getting to the point that I was also going to add, is that like all of these people that have been like talking down or discarding or discounting or just talking shit about Bitcoin for the last couple of years, like one of the biggest values is its adversarial positioning, right? As far as geopolitical risk and all this other stuff. And the funny thing is that when it comes to like those topics, everybody discounts those vectors until all of a sudden, like, war and trade disruption is on their doorstep, and then they care. They discard anybody that is like preparing for it prior to it, but then the Suez Canal like gets shut down, or there's war in the Red Sea and everything's getting redirected around the Horn of Africa and all this stuff. They're like, oh, and then there's consistent talk about like civil war and violence in the US and just all this other stuff's happening. They're like, oh, wait a minute, I need something that's going to function like gold, but I need to be able to move it quickly. Well, there's only one asset out there that's like that.
What is something that I can buy that can't be confiscated, that I can move anywhere, take it with
me? Oh, XRP. Oh wait, no, that's not it. Sorry. I think it's
you can't be saying those with that.
I think it's is it Bitcoin? Is that what you're getting at? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think that was it.
The comment you made about advertising, Alex, I find this one super fascinating, because right now it's we're there and you're starting to see some things, but I think this is just a reflection of the people who are in charge of the budgets for advertising for the ETFs at these major institutions really don't get it yet, right? Like they haven't allocated anywhere near enough money, because from now until the halving, this is the time that these guys should be going for broke, absolute bedlam. If they actually knew what the value of Bitcoin was, or the perspective on this, you know, those guys, if it was me, if this was my marketing department, I would be flat out taking almost every extra dime I could get and putting it into marketing, so that because the way this works is they're going to acquire the BTC, they're never going to give it up. And so the more money that they can get into BTC now, the more powerful they'll be later. And so it's very telling that they're not spending, you know, every day and night trying to get as much capital into this now and get as many Bitcoin as possible. If they figure this out and they say, damn it, man, our rate of return, our return on investment, our ROI for this is now till April of 2024. This is going to be the golden time for us to make hay and get people into a quote unquote ETF position out there, and us have as much Bitcoin going forward as possible. Until you see this wall to wall, you'll know that they don't really actually understand it.
And then at that point, when they do, the Preston Pishes are going to be in very powerful positions.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to like specifically Preston Pish having some swing and dick energy. Like,
did you see him swing that dong towards Elon the other day?
No, I didn't. Man,
did you see it, Alex?
I heard the clip.
Like, yeah.
I listened to the clip. Like, he went at him pretty hard, you know. He tweeted after that. He's like, I didn't really go at him real hard. I'm like, yeah, bro, you went at him pretty hard.
I loved it. I mean, I thought it was confrontational, but it was respectful, you know.
He wasn't a douche about it.
Yeah, he wasn't being toxic about it.
He was just being direct.
He's just mushroom stamping him.
He's like, hey, let me show you something. Oh, you fly rockets? That's great. I got a Apache experience. I don't know, whatever. But you know, at the same time, it's one of those things where
Elon's response was, okay, if you guys are just gonna just hit me with stupid Bitcoin arguments, I'm gonna leave.
I'm gonna take my toys and I'm gonna go home, right? And I was that was a good moment for Bitcoin. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Hats off to Preston if you're out there, man. Like,
great. Was this in like a Spaces? Is this what happened? Okay, I'll have to find it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Kathy Wood's Space, right?
Yeah, I think it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So she had enough information.
She was launching ARK, and she got Elon to come in the room, and then there are a whole bunch of Bitcoiners in there, and they basically were like, "What's up, Elon?"
What are you doing, buddy? Oh man.
He's a brilliant, brilliant dude, man. I really do not understand his position on Bitcoin. He either doesn't get it, or the flip side of that is he does get it and he realizes how much, as Bitcoin progresses, it will dismantle the old system. And he is heavily, heavily dependent upon the old system for his company.
Well, right? Think about how you became a Bitcoiner too, right? I mean, it wasn't all of a sudden, right? It was like somewhere it was a little, and then finally something was like, bam, right?
Yeah.
Now imagine being a guy that has Tesla. He's got
The dude's running like four different multi-billion-dollar companies. Yeah.
He's not a.
He's also got the Boring Company. Don't forget about that one.
Yeah.
Which has gone very, very quiet in the last couple of years, which I would suspect means very large government contracts.
I imagine. But the thing is like, if you're this guy who's literally running multiple billion-dollar corporations that are tied to legacy economics and finance and government and everything else, and now you're having this epiphany like, oh, fuck. All this stuff that I have built, that I have become known for, like, I'm going to have to divorce myself from this kind of stuff. And you know, to a certain degree, I don't think he's going to divorce himself from Starlink. I think Starlink's got,
won't divorce himself from anything that's still making money.
Yeah. I mean, but this past week, I mean, you guys saw what happened to fucking Tesla. I mean, this last week in terms of like users and Tesla with all the frozen fucking cars that were out there that were like lined up at these charging stations, batteries completely frozen, couldn't go anywhere, couldn't do anything. I
didn't hear about that. Did they all stop working because it got too cold or something?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, parking
negative 30 does not do great for batteries.
No. I mean, and now Hertz, I think, is selling over 116,000 of their electric cars back for gasoline cars.
Yep.
So like this is a big deal. This is starting to happen. I mean,
more egg on the face.
Yeah, I get it.
You know, this goes to like, there's, I sense there's a gigantic shift underway, right?
Yeah.
You've got Mille over at the WEF. Basically in his speech, if you haven't seen it, it was amazing. He basically went into the lizard layer central, and he ripped them to shreds
for 30 plus minutes.
Yeah.
I did not realize it was that long. Holy
the
cow.
The dude lit the entire place on fire and basically said, all your socialist programs don't work. You are the problem. Stop
trying to fix it.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is he got into, and if you guys haven't heard this version, this is the English version. Let me turn up the volume.
Is that we must transition away from fossil fuels.
That's still Kerry. Kerry.
Shut up, Kerry.
Glasgow.
I can't get Kerry to shut up.
Is that we must transition away from fossil fuels.
I'm sorry, guys.
It's all good. I mean, I don't know who hired this producer. We're gonna
damn have to, it, John.
Let me get my shit together over here. This version.
I blame John Kerry.
Yeah, John Kerry, stop with this stuff. It's ridiculous.
150 growth rate rises to 1.36% annually. We no longer need 107 years to double per capita GDP, but 66. If we take the period between 1950 and the year 2000, we can see that the growth rate was 2.1% annually, which would mean that in just 33 years, we could double the world's per capita GDP. This trend, far from stopping, remains alive even now. If we consider the period from 2000 to 2023, the growth rate increased again at 3% per year, meaning we could double our per capita GDP globally in only 23 years.
I mean, I'm not going to, but obviously he went through a tirade, and I mean, just an absolute like scorched earth tirade in the den, like went up to their face, poked the bear in the chest, took their lunch money, and then and went home like a victor. When you look at the statistics on how many times this has been viewed compared to all the other WEF videos that are going on, I think this has got over 100,000 views so far, and you know, some of the other ones barely have, you know, 1,000. I mean,
yeah. Christine Christine Lagarde's town hall thing was like 5,000 views.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's almost 100x.
And the funny thing is, like, a month ago, I saw this video of Klaus Schwab addressing some of his WEF folks, and he's like, there's a serious problem in the world. Libertarianism. And yeah, like, there, he was literally talking about, like, libertarians, right? Which, right, is a libertarian. So it's beautiful, man. He goes over there and just lights them completely on fire. And then to contrast that with, you've got the CEO of JP Morgan, Jamie Dimon, where it's become an annual tradition at Davos. They ask him about Bitcoin and he fucking hates it. And they do it every year. And I think they really, at this point, they look forward to it, right? Because the guys are so uncomfortable. We're doing it again. And same old nonsense, you know. I mean, the things that he says makes him look really, in my opinion, quite moronic, because the stuff that he says is just talking points from 2017. You know, stuff that's been refuted a billion times now. And he's not even aware of his own ignorance. Either he's not aware or he knows, and it just hasn't come up with any better FUD than that.
I slapped the producer. I probably have the audio here.
In Iowa, and trying to understand how the American public is going to feel about the economy may ultimately dictate how the president is decided.
Yes, I agree with that. I think it's a mistake to assume that everything's hunky-dory. And, you know, and when stock markets are up, it's kind of like this little drug we all feel. Like, it's just great, you know. But remember, we've had so much fiscal and monetary stimulation. So I'm a little more on the cautious side, that we are facing a lot of things in 24 or 25. And we mentioned Ukraine, the terrorist activity in Israel, the Red Sea, quantitative tightening, which I still question if we understand exactly how that works. I don't think we do. How QE actually worked, what the effect of negative, you know, zero rates was for all this time, and obviously the politics. And, you know, and then the Ukrainian war is affecting oil, gas, food, migration. So you have all these very powerful forces that are going to be affecting us in 24 and 25. So if I was the government, I would be preparing for what I'm going to do about that, assuming things aren't good. And I just also want to point out, I wish the Democrats would think a little more carefully when they talk about MAGA. You know, and if you travel this country, you know, and the country's unbelievable. We took our bus trip this year, and Leslie Picker.
This is
unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, Jamie Dimon. He can't be a dumb guy. I mean, and that's the thing. It's like you're sitting there going, like, all right, he can't be a dumb guy about Bitcoin. He's obviously, I mean, he's actually addressing a lot of what's going on in the world correctly. You know, you're sitting there going like, yeah, man, you know, politicians and Congress and the rest of these guys should obviously be taking stock of some of the stuff that's going on, instead of, you know, obvious open border situations and, you know, everything else that's going on in this country and around the world for that matter. But for him to take the stance that he has on Bitcoin, I don't know. I mean,
you think he's just being disingenuous?
He's got to be. He's got to be, you know, super disingenuous. Well,
you know what makes me wonder that is just watching this clip right now and the part that he goes about, we don't understand QE. And I'm like, bro.
Yeah, we do.
CEO of one of the largest banks in the world. You pretty well understand QE. Like,
yeah. You're going to, I mean, he understands what his net worth has done in the past 20 years. I mean, for sure. That guy. The amount of money he's made compared to the average American in terms of, like, if you just look at it on a percentage scale, like, that guy, he probably makes 50% more than he did in 2007 at minimum, I would think.
Yeah, maybe what he's seeing is he's just seeing his birthday cake go away and he doesn't like it. That's probably more along the lines. And then you've got, you know, on the far left of that screen with that clip, you've got the three regular anchors from CNBC, right? And then right. On the far left, you've got the insider. This is what I call the Joe Kernan method, right? And this is what I made a tweet about this today. I'm like, we need to replicate the Joe Kernan method in every institution in America. And that is, you get a guy on the inside who gets orange pilled. Then he goes down the rabbit hole and becomes a die on this hill Bitcoin maxi. And then He talks about Bitcoin and trolls his coworkers relentlessly. And until the number go up phase and Bitcoin kicks in, and then they all just give up. They're like, fine, Joe, you're right.
It's gonna be epic. But this was Jamie Dimon on Bitcoin, which was ridiculous.
Yeah, but gold's limited in supply.
So is Bitcoin.
And it's been used. I think so, huh?
I do.
I think there's a good chance that when Bitcoin, when we get to that 20 million Bitcoins,
go to 42.
No, that Satoshi's gonna come on there, laugh hysterically, go quiet, all Bitcoin's gonna be erased.
I think, man.
What do you mean go quiet? Like, what is he doing now?
This is why I think he's being disingenuous. I mean, the fact that first of all, Satoshi, right? And the fact that he's like, oh, is it really limited? I almost think that Jamie Dimon is in obviously accumulation phase. Like he understands this shit. He's got to be accumulating. He was trying to, I mean, think about it. If Jamie Dimon sits there and says, oh, Bitcoin is, this is your savior. If he takes the other end of the spectrum and says, this is your savior, his accumulation just got a hell of a lot more expensive. Hell of a lot more. I think this is the most disingenuous fucking thing ever. Like Jamie Dimon is no dumbass. Like he's not a dumb guy. And for him to, you know, say this on the hardest money that the planet's ever seen, like I think it's complete shit.
Can we backtrack a little bit and get a little adversarial as to why the World Economic Forum would allow and invite Milei to give that speech in the first place?
Oh, yes, please do. Because you posted something really interesting about this and about like kissing Miley's feet or Milei's.
Yeah.
Feet. Yeah. So
like as a caveat, guys, I love everything that he has said. I love everything that he was saying in the speeches. But we have to keep in mind, he's a politician. He's a global politician.
Yeah.
He was invited to the World Economic Forum to speak at Davos. There's a series, like bringing those three together, there's a series of questions we need to start asking is, why did they allow it? Why did they invite him? And then what are they potentially planning to use him for in the future? Right? Because like, this is kind of like,
I think that's kind of like question, Mike.
This is kind of like with like, let's take it back to high school when like the popular kids realize that they're in a bind and then they grab like the smart kid to help them out for a second with like their like, you know, social positioning. I was like, no, we're not bad people. Like, look, we got this nerdy guy, and they pat him on the head. They're like, oh, see, we're friends with him. And then as soon as like everyone's like, oh, okay. And then they like push him off the cliff. Right. So like what I'm concerned with is, I'm hoping that I'm wrong, but I'm concerned that they might be trying to set him up for an economic hitman style country failure. So then they can be like, see, this is what happens to the libertarians.
That's
they fail. They fail. Our socialist propaganda is correct. Our communist way of life is correct. That's what I'm concerned is what they're setting it up for right now.
I don't disagree with that. And it brings into question, does Javier see it? Does he not see it? Is he part of it? Is he going to fight it?
Yeah.
Is he going to help them in trying to destroy libertarianism? And that's the thing, is now you've got this guy who will be subject, and you mentioned the book, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, where IMF and all these
BIS,
Bank and the rest of these, you know, organizations will come in. They'll set up an economic system that benefits them and do some things. Now it wouldn't be that way, because I don't think Javier is going to accept debt for one thing. Like I don't think he will. But in terms of the other mechanisms that these guys have the power to move, you know,
yeah.
We're talking sanctions, some people.
We're talking clandestine moves to cripple any sort of infrastructure or pushing out of like resources like oil or what. Like I think Argentina pushes out oil. I can't remember. I might be mixing it up with Venezuela. I probably am.
But no, they're absolutely resource rich and oil rich. And then it's the thing is, in terms of going in and doing this to a country that has suffered as much as they have over the past 100 years in Argentina.
Yeah.
You know, you're not talking about, you know, major operations. What you're talking about is small operations, whether it's, you know, trains in terms of, you know, moving things around the country by heavy rail, water supply, you know, possibilities out there, and whatever, you know, water delivery, salinization, whatever they're trying to do. But it's going to be all of those infrastructure pieces that are already in bad decay and failing.
Yep.
That they're going to have to try to be, you know, turn around. And if they're met with a lot of resistance while they're doing it, then, you know, it could derail the entire experiment. But
yeah,
I, you know, for the life of me, I think, you know, the Argentinian people, as they're coming back together, and then I've heard a lot of things where, you know, the Argentinian people are excited for the first time in a long time.
Very similar to El Salvador with Bukele.
Yeah. And, you know, when you have a population that's actually looking out for the good of the country, you know, because their individual interests are being looked after versus this, you know, this, you know, really despotic collectivization that, you know, that yeah. Javier calls it, you may have more people looking at outsiders going, no, you know what, screw this. We're not going to put up with this kind of stuff. We're going to call out, you know, where it is. We're going to call out anything that we see.
And like an immune response to possible clandestine operations would be really good. But to the point that you're getting at too, is like all those issues, the way that like translates to clandestine operations is very small, agile teams,
yep.
very little cost to like carry out the operations. Right. Because yep. like they don't have the kinds of surveillance and defense systems like the US and like China and Russia and the UK all have to protect themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'm not trying to be doomy on like what everything he's saying. It's just like, guys, like stop kissing his feet. He's a global politician.
Yep.
Like, let's start analyzing the potentials of what's going on. Cause like the very same stuff we're saying about Milei could very easily be true about Trump too. There's a lot of support for Trump right now, but people are just like willingly ignoring the fact that he's been on camera talking positively about Klaus Schwab. Like, guys, I get it. You're excited and you want to like, you want to feed your savior complexes, but let's just chill and start asking the smart questions.
I think it's the right place to be with any leader, especially anybody who's claiming to kind of, I want to say, be on our side, but literally, I mean, that's what he's doing. So to keep an eye on him and to see how things develop with this and what they're going to do, because no matter what happens, I think this crowd from the WEF is definitely going to take their shots at Argentina.
Oh yeah.
For sure. I mean, no matter what, how he responds to these things and what he puts in place is going to be very interesting. And, you know, from his point of view, it sounds like it has to be a decentralized, you know, push from his countrymen, yeah. you know, yep. to say, listen, this is the immune response that you're talking about. It has to be you as a country, you as an individual standing up and taking charge and really working at this, because what we're not going to do is come after you for extra taxes so that we can build a large defense. We're not going to come after you for extra taxes so that we can do all these things. This is going to have to be fixed at the local decentralized level. And that's going to be very important. I think, you know, that when you start putting, you know, it's like, you know, a kid, when you give them a car, right? It's like, if you give a kid a car, you know, that kid is absolutely, you know, he's not going to be incentivized to take care of the car as much. He's not going to be incentivized to drive safely and all those things where
yeah.
you're blue collar kid and you work your ass off for a $4,000 piece of shit Jeep or something like that. And you know, you're not driving it like a crazy man. You're not doing all those things. So if the people at the local level start to see this as their community, as they've got, you know, some, and I hate to use the word even, but some equity in their local community.
Man, you threw out one of the DEI, yeah. really.
But you know, in terms of describing kind of like taking ownership for your community and trying to help it out, I think that goes a long ways towards building a community itself, which is going to defend yeah. itself.
And I will say that what Bukele and Milei are doing very, very publicly is also very, very good and healthy, in my opinion, for the American people and American culture. As far as like we're getting reminded of what like actual like fighting for freedom looks like. Like, you gotta, like, you have to get the people behind it.
Yes.
Right. And like, and I don't know. I'm still of the opinion that like a lot of the American population has to go through some difficulties for a while before they realize what, how valuable freedom actually is. But our neighbors doing it, I think, is like, again, our neighbors doing it is going to be really, really good for reminding everybody of what it looks like. But also, the United States of America has like been behooved to start working and increasing our teamwork and interaction with our South American and Central American neighbors for a really long time. I think this is probably a good time to like really start kicking that into high gear.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Alex, I don't know if you've got anything to add to that. I was going to move on to this guy that is the Heritage president. His name is Kevin Roberts. Did you guys see his speech by any chance over at WEF? WEF has been fairly interesting this year. you had Javier, and now you've got Kevin Roberts. I think it was today that he made this speech.
I did see this one, actually. It was really good.
3 minutes. It's definitely worth it. We'll comment afterwards.
It's laughable that you would, or anyone would, describe Davos as protecting liberal democracy. It's equally laughable to use the word dictatorship at Davos and aim that at President Trump. In fact, I think that's absurd. But I'm going to step aside from that constructive criticism and instead answer your question.
Yep.
And I'm going to be substantive here. President Trump, if he's the next president, for that matter, I think whoever the next conservative president is going to take on the power of the elites, which I mentioned earlier. But the thing that I want to drive home here, the very reason that I'm here at Davos, is to explain to many people in this room and who are watching, with all due respect, nothing personal, but that you're part of the problem. Political elites tell the average people on 3 or 4 or 5 issues that the reality is X, when in fact reality is Y. Take immigration. Elites tell us that open borders and even illegal immigration are okay. The average person tells us in the United States that both rob them of the American way of life. They're right. President Trump will take that on behalf of the average American.
All right, I'm going to pause this right here because I think this is one of those things that I am seeing not just here in America, but all over the Western world. And I think it deserves some vision from our panel here. Like this, the invasion that is occurring in the United States right now and in Ireland and in the UK, and it's already obviously happened in France, parts of, you know, Germany. There, the Western part of the world is being invaded by a lot of fighting age males from all over the global South. Rightly, I think, you know, a lot of these guys are pissed off. I think a lot of these guys are pissed off that we've been in their lands for so long. I think it's, you know, one of those opportunities to go, shit, I get to get out of here, and somebody's maybe paying for me to take my ass over to these Western countries where I may have a better lifestyle, where I might, you know, become part of this without actually knowing why they're being transferred here in the first place. And you know, as I see this, you know, from a military standpoint, you know, we've talked about this for a long time in a lot of my circles, but back in the day, they talked about, you know, how China would go to war with Russia. And then what China's plan was is just to march 1 million unarmed Chinese over the border every damn day until Russia's like, enough, like, we cannot take any more, right? And now if you're doing that here in the States and you're doing this in Western worlds, you're marching armies of people into places, you know, unbeknownst to them that, you know, why they're even moving there, except for they think it's going to be a better life. Now, if you start to couple that with a lot of what's coming out of the WEF over the past few years, whether it's contagion, whether it's cyber or grid down or any of those things, if you look at what's going on specifically here in America too, where you've got, you know, places like Texas who are busing these people all over the United States to Chicago, to San Francisco, to New York, where these are obviously liberal bastions that are, you know, that have claimed to be sanctuary cities and sanctuary states and all these other things. And they're like kind of taking them up on the word. If you look at this somewhat more adversarially and say, huh, wouldn't Texas just seal their own border if they were really serious about this? Wouldn't they just stop the immigration instead of sending these people all over to these other parts of the world? And if you get to the point where you say, okay, Now it's time for the grid to go down. It's time for maybe the internet to go down. Hey, maybe it's time for some supply line interruptions in terms of, you know, canals or anything like that. Now what you've got is a people who are 100% dependent on whoever's taking care of them, like the, you know, the Chicago O'Hare terminal. You've got thousands of people in there. You've got thousands of people who are being put up in schools in New York. Now these people who are 100% dependent on the United States of America to feed them, to house them, to clothe them, to take care of everything for them, now don't have their big brother watching over their shoulder, providing everything. And now they have to go seek things out for survival. You want to talk about sending those areas into absolute chaos. Like,
yeah,
if I was planning a military strike, that's exactly what I would do if I was doing it against the United States.
Yeah. And not to, I mean, yeah. You want to think in worst case scenario, adversarial terms, man. You know, when the whole COVID thing came out and I found out that they were making it mandatory, I was at the time I was watching an interview with a gal who has worked with ARMID, I think is what it's called. It's basically the Army's version of the CDC. And they work hand in hand with the CDC, but they're also in charge of all the basically biological weapons programs and studying biological weapons and understanding what they were. And this woman, I believe she was a general and one of the most recognized, had written a ton of peer research papers, et cetera. She's very respected in her position and her role. She was basically saying that what this looks like to me is part one of part two for a bioweapon. Like you could get people to be vaccinated by this thing and then deliver another payload later.
Yeah.
That would turn it into a bioweapon. And that got me thinking.
Oh, yikes.
And that got me thinking about, well, if you wanted to completely debilitate the United States military, just fill them full of all these vaccines, which is, as it's turned out, have been incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
And then create programs where all the strong dudes want to leave. And what you have left is a bunch of people who are either willing to put up with it until they can get out. Because there's a bunch of really good people still that are still in there. And you get more and more where the only people who will sign up, because all the guys who are what we would consider our comrades in the military, they're not joining anymore.
No.
Right?
No, their kids aren't either.
They don't want to serve this chain of command. They don't want to serve, you know, corrupt politicians. They don't want to serve a corrupt military industrial complex. They don't want to go overseas or send their kids overseas to do unspeakable things and to get blown into little pieces for a bunch of corrupt douchebags in Washington, basically. And, yeah. What better way to position the U.S. military than to do all of that? Not to mention all the other stuff. I saw also this, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but there's information starting to get leaked out, so to speak. There are people that are embedding themselves in these convoys of people coming all the way from like Ecuador or whatever, from all over through Central America, all the way up to the southern border of the United States. And they're documenting with video the entire process. And apparently, according to some of these video documentaries, they're claiming this stuff is being actually organized by the UN and the Red Cross. So
they're allowing these people to use a warrant for arrest as a form of identification to get on planes.
Now there's two lines at TSA, right?
Yeah.
Undocumented illegal immigrant line. Right. And then the line for U.S. citizens, where the U.S. citizens have to follow all these retarded rules. Excuse me for using that word. Some people are offended by it. Ridiculous rules. And we as citizens have to put up with that. When
they don't have to.
Illegal immigrants just get a free pass in.
Yeah. American citizens are second class in their own country.
And here's the cherry on top of it all, right? All this stuff, all this nonsense is being paid for with your tax dollars.
Yep.
Yep.
So you're paying for it.
Through force and coercion. We will come in and kill you if we have to, but you're going to pay for this one way or another.
It's
additionally to what Alex was talking about that scared me was when he was talking about with like the two different payloads, 6 million people that aren't US citizens that are undocumented are also going to serve as probably effective delivery mechanisms for like some sort of infectious pathogen.
I wouldn't say probably, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Most assuredly.
It's a potential attack vector, right?
It's a less than zero probability.
For people who are not veterans or not military oriented, we're saying a bunch of stuff and it's scaring the living crap out of you. Our intention is not good to scare you. We think
it kind of is.
Well, that's
like we want to scare you to the point of like, hey, like you guys, this is why you guys need to think about this shit, because like the problem is that like Hollywood, right, has caused a lot of people to just think that this kind of stuff doesn't happen. It's like, have you guys watched the actual documentaries on World War II? Like not a Hollywood film, but like watched the things that have happened in World War II and World War I? Like nothing is off the table when it comes to these kinds of power dynamics. Nothing.
Yep.
And especially when you're talking about like adversaries of the US, they've not liked us and they've had justification for not liking us for a long time. And especially if we're talking about the red and yellow country, they play games in a matter of decades and centuries, not in a matter of 4-year presidencies.
All right. So let's talk about some happy stuff, some solutions for those.
Yeah. Let's finish this guy's rant.
Right here. Robert.
Overloaded a certain number of people here with.
Yeah. they're here for it. We got this. Robert's going to cheer him up a little bit here because he's speaking truth to power. He'll let him finish here.
Elites also tell us that public safety isn't a problem in big American cities. Just travel to New York or Washington or Dallas, Texas. The average person will tell you that the lack of public safety damages not just the American way of life, but their life. President Trump will take that on. Thirdly, I guess the favorite at the World Economic Forum is climate change. Elites tell us that we have this existential crisis with climate change, so much so that climate alarmism is probably the greatest cause for mental health crisis in the world. The solutions the average person know based on climate change are far worse and more harmful and cost more human lives, especially in Europe during the time that you need heating, than do the problem and the problems themselves. Fourth, two more here, Robin. Okay. The fourth, China. The number one adversary, not just to the United States, but to free people on planet Earth. Not only did we at Davos not say that, we give the Chinese Communist Party a platform. Count on President Trump ending that nonsense. And fifth, as we sit here, another supranational organization, the World Health Organization, is discussing foisting gender ideology upon the global South. These are practices that are under review, if not being rejected, by countries in Northern Europe. The new president, especially if it's President Trump, will, as you like to say, trust the science. He will understand the basic biological reality of manhood and womanhood. And do you know why? Not because of retribution, not because he's a dictator, but because he has the power of the American people behind him. And it's connected to Senator Portman's excellent point that in addition to needing a vigorous executive, we look forward to having the popular will inform both the House and Senate in 2025 to pass laws on all of those issues and many others. Ultimately, Robin, I think President Trump, if in fact he wins a second term, is going to be inspired by the wise words of Javier Milei, who said that he was in power not to guide sheep, but to awaken lions.
So that's two major dissenting voices that just come out very matter-of-factly and destroy the WEF in their own den. Fantastic stuff.
It makes me hopeful and also concerned at the same time for how election season is going to go here in America. because I've been hearing a lot of rumblings from very interesting personalities in the political sphere, in private conversations, that there are meaningful and serious concerns that there will be attempts to, we'll just call it fuckery, as far as like the next election goes.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it past them. I wouldn't put it past them trying to actually either postpone or completely.
Yeah.
What's the word? Not have elections.
They can't. These monsters know they can't afford to lose now. And I think as we back them into this corner, as more and more people have awoken and started to take action, like, you can't afford an election right now. Are you kidding? I mean, Joe Biden, you know, the Muppet that he is, Kamala Harris, you've got two people that should have a slam dunk in terms of re-election that most people wouldn't allow around their children or their pets. You know, they definitely wouldn't, entrust them with anything important. Maybe even as important as like going and getting them, a meal, for their family. I like that's who's supposedly at the executive level. Right. And so, right.
Did you see the latest clip of him like creeping out that 10-year-old girl?
Yeah.
Like, did you hear what he said on the hot mic too? Like, he said sorry for something. I was like, dude, what is happening? Like, what is going on here?
Even in that appearance where I think he's in some sort of brewery or he's in some sort of store, and this guy is, walking him into his place of business, and with his left hand, that guy reaches over to Joe Biden and stops him from coming in any further into the premises. And then a female and a male walk up to greet him. And it was almost like the guy, like you could see Joe is like, who is this guy that's touching me, and like kind of holding me back, he shouldn't be touching me, but like this guy looked like he was more concerned about who was coming out to meet Joe, to stop Joe and like kind of draw a line versus, and the thing is, we could go on and on about the catastrophe that the Biden administration has been in everything that it's touched, from Fauci to the EPA and the FDA and the rest of these organizations. But these guys are so entrenched in the lies that they cannot now afford to not be in power to control the FBI, the CIA, the rest of these apparatuses that are out there. And for this guy, Robert, like, great speech and everything. The idea that this is going to be Trump and not the American people that have to rectify this, like, this is the one thing. I
savior really, complex.
There's nobody coming. Trump is not coming. And even if Trump wins, he's got headwinds, right? He's got headwinds even worse than he had in 2016. If the Republicans have the House and the Senate, it doesn't matter. They had it in 2016 and they did nothing with it, nothing of substance at all. Trump may look like he's fighting and he delivers some great lines and he's fun as hell to, just laugh at. But in terms of, where we're going in 2025, this is going to be the people. This is not going to be President Trump. This is going to be the people uniting to do something about it, or rolling over and taking the L. But I don't think that's the American way.
Well, and you know what I suspect they will try to do to, as Alex put it, not have an election. I suspect that they're going to try and, if they're going to do it, which I think they probably will, they're going to try and use these armed conflicts in the Middle East and in Ukraine to suggest that America is in a quote unquote time of war. And that suggesting to the populace that like now is not the time to change leadership.
Could be.
Which would be absolutely ridiculous. But if things go far enough, I wouldn't be surprised if certain events get allowed to stir up fear in the population.
I definitely see that.
Yeah. So. Sorry for taking it doomy, but it's like it's stuff that like I'm always like, every time I do this, it's just like, guys, like, wake up, get the sugar high out of the way and start let's start actually paying attention to what's really happening, to be prepared so that like the American people can do what we need them to do when the time comes. Because if we can't, if we're not, like,
and what is that exactly, Mike?
Like, first of all, I think is just having the resilience and the mental fortitude to like sift through what's happening, right? To specifically not give in to fear and anger and hate, which is what they've been specifically relying on for this entire presidency to drum up support for all of their ridiculous initiatives and social movements, which they've been using to like also like take more rights from the population, to take more as far as taxes go.
Are you talking like, of masses of the people or?
Masses of the people in the sense of like people need to start like, you know, working on their individual fortitude and resilience.
Okay. I don't disagree with that, but I think we got two generations to go before what you're talking about is a reality. And here's the thing. I mean, if you spend time around kids that are under 20 nowadays, like there are some really, really strong ones and really good ones, but there's a crap ton that aren't. And we got a little ways to go here.
And what
it makes me think of is we're in a period where humans have been largely domesticated, right? Yeah. I saw this really funny meme the other day where there was this one badass dog who's like, yo, man, like you want to tax us 3% on our tea? We're going to like murder a bunch of you guys in your sleep on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Right. Which is what Washington did with their troops as they crossed that one river on Christmas Eve. Right. And then you've got the other one who's like, yo, if you keep crossing this line and taking away our freedoms three or four more times, we are going to vote so hard.
Right.
And it's like, that's the reality for the masses right now. And so Milei said this one thing that has been on my mind for a little bit. He's like, I am not here to guide sheep. I am here to awake the lions.
Yeah.
And that's the solution.
Yes.
Wake the lions, not trying to get all the sheep to be like, hey, stop being sheep, guys. That is not going to work, bro. Like, they have proven scientifically they can scare the shit out of the majority of the population and get them to do what they want.
Well, and one of the
take those sheep and turn them into lions, my brother. You have got to find the lions and say, hey guys, it is time.
Yeah.
The biggest reason why I'm specifically talking about it now is that like one of the things with regards to resilience is like the physical fitness can really like feed into a lot of like the mental and the philosophical stuff. Getting started now, like if people get started now and they can maintain it up through October, I don't think like people really discount how much change can happen with themselves in a 6 to 7 month period if they're like working at it consistently. And that like that can put America in a situation that is a lot better if a meaningful percentage are doing it now and get started now and do it consistently for 6 to 7 months versus none of them getting started and then we're in a like the very same position. I think it's a world of difference. But I could be wrong.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
It's no surprise that they're trying to crack down on militias right now too, right? It's one of those things that came up in the headlines last week. The last part of the WEF that I wanted to share, obviously we're getting towards the end of the show.
Sure, both of them, right?
Of course. Why wouldn't I not? Like maybe more than once. It's so this was the most epic of all, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people at the WEF saw this and probably liked it even less. But here we go.
I appreciate the World Economic Forum providing me the opportunity to be on this stage and say, fuck you, Klaus Schwab, and fuck your New World Order. We, the people, were born free. We will stay free. And you and all of your globalist friends, including everyone in this room, can go fuck yourself.
Dude.
So well made.
Damon, Imani, man, you are one of the funniest dudes. I've been keeping up with this guy for a while. A lot of what he does, you know, in terms of like replacing himself on The View or on other panels or whatever it is so well done. And he speaks, you know, such good truth on so many fronts, man. This needed to be done. And, you know, for somebody that obviously wasn't there, and you know, I've seen a lot of people that think, oh man, this is so good.
When I saw this, I thought it was real for a second. I had to ask. I asked in the thread. I was like, is this real?
Yeah.
It's not. Dude, real. I thought it was real. I was hoping it was real too. I was just like, oh man.
So that's the first time you guys had seen him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he's got quite a few good things.
Having the microphone like distortion in it, like so, like he's getting too close to the microphone makes it like so much more believable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you like to see the follow up? I thought the follow up was probably just as good as his original. Let's have a quick listen to this one. He comes.
They have back. A black eye.
He's got a black eye. underneath it says, "The elites at the WEF were not expecting this." Breaking, WEF guest who crashed Davos conference apologizes. Uh-oh. Is it going to go? Maybe it's not going to go. Oh man, is Twitter? Come on, guys.
You need to refresh that.
I'm going
to
refresh this because this is definitely worth it.
They'll probably just start playing in there immediately anyway.
Stood on this stage and said some things that I should not have said. We all deserve a second chance. So I would like to apologize to absolutely no one. None of you were asked how we should live our lives. All of you motherfuckers took your private jets to show up to this meeting, so don't lecture us about the environment. I ain't eating bugs. You can eat these nuts. And once again, you and your favorite agenda can go fuck.
Yeah, I agree that also like the audio of like the audience sounding gasping. Shock. And
oh man, you're all welcome out there. I mean, this you can count on Bitcoin veterans to usually end their show with at least some laughs, maybe some stories. or
to apologize to absolutely no one. What did he say? What did he say?
I ain't eat your bugs. You can eat these nuts. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we are juvenile. Maybe you know,
we are. It's for real. That's a real thing. But I'm not. You know, I'm not. I don't regret that. I don't have a problem with that. I understand. Like our comrades in arms. Many times, you know, people are like, gosh, you know, just grow up. You're all adults here, right? But it's like, I know a lot of military guys, we've never lost that sort of juvenile sense of humor, and I hope we don't.
Well, and like, because like that's at Alex, I think that's at the core of like how you tolerate and deal with a lot of shit. Like you need that juvenile thread like in the middle of it to just like be able to laugh at something stupid that's happening in potentially the worst moment of your life. Because if you can't use that laughter to your own like resilience, like I'm sorry, but like I don't know how you could get through a lot of shit.
I will tell you guys a little secret of mine. I listen like every night before I go to bed. It's comedy, no matter what I'm doing. Like I try if I'm traveling, I have comedy channels on Instagram that I'll just kind of flip through. And what it does is it loads your brain with serotonin before you go to bed. And if you can load your brain up with serotonin before you go to bed, your tomorrow is going to be better. It's like making your bed in the morning, right? If you make your bed in the morning, you've knocked out one task and you've set yourself up for creating more and more tasks. And if you have a shitty day, you still get back into a nice bed. Well, if you get into that nice bed after a shitty day and you listen to some comedy and you laugh at some things, maybe some really dark shit. Like I love guys that have, you know, the fun, like, Dave Chappelle's great. Rogan's great. There's Santino's pretty good. Shane Gillis is off the charts.
Dude, I rewatched it the other right? day.
But you know, if you can flood your brain with serotonin and laugh at the dark stuff, you're gonna be such a healthier person because it's gonna give you stock of things. It's gonna give you stock of like, hey, I am actually laying in a warm bed. I've got electricity, I've got a warm shower or bath or whatever it is that I can clean myself up with. I had dinner tonight or food today what you got to take that mental stock, and you got to have that release, you know, that little bit of relief. You know, there's, you know, people who will yell to try to like create that little bit of serotonin to get some pain off of them. But that what laughter does in terms of changing your psyche for the better, in terms of, you know, positive mental attitude, PMA is what we used to call it. Man, it will do wonders for you. Try it for a week. Try going to bed, watching some comedy. There's plenty of it on Netflix. It's really good. And I guarantee you, you just start to see the shift in the way you're approaching the next day, and then the next day after that, and the day after that, and it starts to compound. And before you know it, you can laugh at damn near anything. And that's going to be the key to getting through some of the hard times that we're going through is you know, being able to laugh at this. So really get into your inner 13-year-old. Don't let that guy go, man. He's your best friend in a lot of these situations.
I'm going to echo what I said, and kind of really what Alex was saying is like people that like come up and say like, why don't you grow up? It's like, dude, shut up. Just go away. Like, go find something better to do. Like, you're not helping anybody by asking for them to grow up in that kind of sense. Like, it's just like life's just not fun. Like, if you don't have like that childish kind of like wonder, you know.
Ridiculous. I agree.
You should probably contact Andrew Huberman about making a sleep protocol involving laughter before you go to bed.
Absolutely. It'd be a really, hey, if you guys are out there, and I know some of you guys got the big brains for the space, you know, definitely, maybe definitely think about putting together, I don't know, a different kind of Instagram or something where you can channel these things. But any closing thoughts for you guys? We're already at 8:27 here on the East Coast.
No, we went a lot longer than I was expecting we would go tonight. So I have nothing else to add to what we've been talking about.
Alex?
He's thinking.
He's deep in contemplation here.
Yeah. You know, I'm just going to shout out all the people who've helped Bitcoin veterans grow. You know, some people are like, you know, you don't speak for all veterans, yada, yada. I know we don't. We speak for ourselves, right? But the Bitcoin veterans thing is growing way faster than what we are. You see 3-5 of us, sometimes 6 of us on a pod, but there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of veterans who are part of this thing, and they're growing it and they're building stuff. We're not telling these guys what to do. Without our direction, they're just growing it and building it. I just want to thank all of you guys because you're awesome. And thanks for all the initiatives that you're doing, all the growth. We want to get a whole bunch of veterans at Nashville 2024, show up in force. Maybe we'll have some t-shirts that people can wear. We'd love to see you there and continue to grow this mission, man. Continue to help people understand that there is hope. There is hope. Like, lock arms with your brethren. There's a way through this thing. We're going to make it happen.
Yeah, I guess the last thing I'll say is, yeah, I echo everything that Alex is saying. This thing is amazing to be a part of. To do this small piece up front is a real privilege. And I will tell you, you know, the more that I get into this and I see new people coming into the Bitcoin space and the Bitcoin veteran space, this is so much bigger than money. It's what the communications protocol that Bitcoin is that it incentivizes in terms of a better communication between us that allows for this focus, for this community, for this brotherhood and sisterhood and family to grow. I think that's something, you know, we're going to be putting away a lot of the things from our past and the divisiveness of what we used to argue about and what we used to hold important and, you know, trivialized our lives, where, you know, we're really kind of getting into the brass tacks of things here. It's going to get very real. You're in getting to know these people, coming to Nashville or to PBE or any of these places where you're going to get face to face and really plug in. This is the magic of Bitcoin. This is what it's really, really about. It's about the revolution that's happening in each and every one of us, not necessarily even outside of us. If we're changing, and if we can change, then the world can change. And if we start doing that as a people, That's where this thing really starts to gain a ton of momentum, and that energy and that push that we're going to need for some really crazy changing times. And, you know, I know we've talked about it before, but unwinding the spring, you know, I know, Corey Clipson was on here and we kind of highlighted the race to avoid the war. Unwinding the spring that is the fiat world and coming into this new capitalized world of Bitcoin, this is something that if we can do it right, the amount of kinetic energy that's going to fight at the end of this is going to be way less. And so plug in, get to know each other, grow each other, grow more people, be those people that are going out there and being, you know what, you know, I guess last week would have been a good time or earlier this week. The light and the love where, you know, that's what MLK said. You know, I know he was a little bit of a socialist and, you know, that kind of tampers it down, but being the light and love, Christ said it, I think Gandhi and the rest of those guys, like, this is that group. You are going to be the light and the love, and that does nothing but attract more positive energy in the space, and that's exactly what we have. So, Alex, Mike, thanks for hanging out, man. This has been a fun hour and a half. For everybody out there in the crowd, thank you guys for always showing up and showing out. We will see you guys next week. Thursday is going to be the new time from now on, Thursday, 7 p.m. We will do this until we need to change our schedule again. So, thanks, fellas. Thanks, everybody. Have a good one. Peace.